Let me just first of all thank our co-sponsor of this webinar, Student Achievement Partners. You'll hear from Sandra in just a bit, Sandra Alberti from Student Achievement Partners. But the partnership between Learning Forward and Student Achievement Partners is one that we highly value. Each of our organizations brings an expertise to this conversation. And as you'll see throughout the webinar, you'll see the evidence of each of our individual organizations' expertise. But what I hope that you'll also see is that together, we're able to really have this strong conversation about this alignment across curricula, across student or college and career ready standards, instruction materials, and professional learning. So we certainly recognize that we are stronger together. And later we'll talk about our own Summer Institute where we're also partnering and sharing some what we hope will be useful information for those who are doing this work in schools and in districts. So here are the folks who will be on the webinar. You'll hear from Sandra first from Student Achievement Partners. We're very, very thankful to have Sandra, who will be joining us as one of the senior fellows with Student Achievement Partners with a focus on strategic partnerships. And then Linda McMillan, who is a assistant principal in DC public schools with a focus on mathematics. Then Tracy Crowe, we're of course very thankful to have Tracy, who is with Learning Forward, and myself with Learning Forward. And we are your team this morning. And then in the background, you see typing in the chat box, Ariel Kane, who's also here from Learning Forward, answering all of your technical questions as we move through the details of today. So here are our outcomes. And as you look at this list, you know, this whole conversation around the alignment among college and career ready standards, curriculum, instruction materials, and professional learning. And we really do see this as an equity issue. We believe that each and every child, if they don't experience excellent teaching and learning, that's an equity issue. And there's some barriers to that happening in schools, particularly when children don't have access to excellent curricula and curriculum materials and the professional learning to support teachers' effective use of those materials is lacking in any way. And so those outcomes are part of our concern as two organizations and will certainly be the basis for our conversation today. And so we're going to do a quick poll. The question is, what is your familiarity with the subject of this webinar? And at this time, the poll is up, and we ask all of you right now to go ahead and, you know, are you joining because you're interested, you have some knowledge but you hope to gain more, or all the way up to you're well-versed? So we're just going to leave that poll question up for a moment. Please take a moment right now to go ahead and put in your response. And I know when we get the results, we're going to see people are across the board here, but it'll be interesting to see, you know, where do we find most of us and what category do we find most of us on this webinar? So I'm going to give you just another few moments to submit your response, and we'll see what we got. All right, so as we start to take a look at the results, we'll see where we fall in just a moment. So there we have it. A lot of folks have some knowledge and hope to gain more. And we have some folks who, you know, so that the largest group or the second largest group at the end were folks who didn't respond, so I'm guessing they were somewhere in the category of B. And of course, there are some folks who follow this research and are launching efforts to apply. So that's sort of a good distribution, and I think that'll be good for the conversation that we want to have. So if we think about how do we define this problem, and as you look at this slide right now, this will set up the conversation that we want to have. And as you look at these bullets, particularly the first and second, where we know that too few students are at the level that we want. And until we have 100% of our students performing above and excelling in all of their areas, we know that there's always work to do. And there's always this concern that there's variation within schools, often greater than across schools. And if we have a single school where there's this variation within the building, that's a challenge and that's a problem when it comes to teaching and learning. And then the access issue to high quality materials is certainly part of the challenge, but the exclamation mark being on then the effect of professional learning to go along with implementing those high quality materials. And then the research. We know that there's great research out there on the importance of high quality materials, but do people have access to that research? Are they actualizing that research, or is it being ignored? So as we think about the problem, we know that we need to think about solutions. And I'm excited to turn the presentation over to Sandra Alberti, who's coming from Student Achievement Partners, to help us think about, from your perspective, Sandra, how does the organization think about this issue, and what are your suggestions for going forward? So, Sandra,
thank you, yep.
You're on.
Thank you very much, Fred, and I just want to kind of echo Fred's initial sentiments about how excited we are at Student Achievement Partners to be working in collaboration with Learning Forward. We have committed ourselves as an organization to really supporting educators across the country. And, you know, many of the problems that Fred shared in the previous slide, and as Fred said, joining our two voices and sets of strengths together, we think is going to make a huge difference in this work for teachers and the students that they serve. So when we think about this work of supporting teachers and what we refer to as like making the work work, we are increasingly reinforcing ourselves this notion about coherent instructional systems. And so Student Achievement Partners is an organization that was kind of brought up in this world of college and career ready standards. That's when we originally started over 10 years ago. And certainly we started from the centerpiece of, do we have a set of standards that represent college and career readiness? And, you know, for the first number of years, we looked at really three separate things. Actually, initially, as most of you probably remember, with different levels of emotionality, starting, you know, thinking about what would the assessments look like that would appropriately represent proficiency in college and career-ready standards. So there was a whole suite of work around that that some of you may recall. It's a bit of a history lesson now, but some of you may recall that work. A second thing that happened early on is, you know, we all knew that it would be very difficult for teachers to do anything with a set of standards if there were not quality materials that supported it. And as you all know, that is a huge ocean of players. What would it take to improve instructional materials so that they are actually focused on the things that matter most for kids? I will just say from my perspective, one of the reasons why we can have conversations like we're having, the work that we're doing together, is because the instructional materials marketplace has changed dramatically, you know, over the last 8 years. And, you know, our hope has always been that quality wins. And I think we're seeing more and more evidence of that going forward. And the third thing was, you know, how do we speak about instructional practice? And that would be, you know, in response to the often asked question of what does this look like when teachers are actually doing this work? And so for a long time, from the beginning of Student Achievement Partners' existence, we talked about these three things as three separate kind of checklists, so to speak. Do you have the right materials? Are you giving the right assessments? Do teachers know what they need to do? And of course, all of this needs to be supported not just in a super, super high-powered professional learning environment, but that these things also need to connect to each other. And we feel very strongly that professional learning opportunities for professional learning communities is one of the ways that we are going to tie these three things together. So let me just give a little bit of background context on what we mean by the content of this work. In literacy, just kind of a shorthand version of what we are talking about, what we mean is that students are actually regularly engaging in quality text that is complex, that is grade level, that is rich, and that is part of the practice of college and career ready in literacy, that in engaging in that work, students are going back to the text, using text, they are disciplined in the practice of speaking, writing in response to text. And then third, that part of their work in literacy is about building knowledge, and they will do that through their engagement in the text itself. When we think about that same level of detail in mathematics, we think about, of course, this idea that we focus on fewer things that strongly matter. Many of you know, we've been in this business for a while here, that we're often referred to this as going from, you know, a mile wide and an inch deep to much more focus and fewer concepts so that year after year, students can build knowledge of mathematics. Coherence, which, you know, I don't think a day goes by where I don't hear people from a variety of professions, backgrounds, talking about the strength and importance of coherence. It makes my heart happy to hear that, because one of the things I think about when I think about coherence is that things are just supposed to make sense. And, you know, whether it's physically how our brain is wired or conceptually in the work that we're doing, we should always be thinking about making connections in the world of math. It refers to this notion that students are always given the opportunity to think about how the math they learned in a previous unit of instruction, in a previous grade level, connects to what they are in fact learning in present day lessons. And then the third aspect when we think about math is to think about when we learn math, that it is not a matter of choice, a matter of geography, a matter of textbook publisher, that we believe that in order to be proficient in math, students need all three: conceptual understanding, procedural skill and fluency, and applications. And I know in quickly looking through some of the initial questions, some people were thinking about, like, hey, when we hear people saying high quality instructional materials, you know, what does that actually mean? Do we all actually know what it means? And, you know, not to oversimplify it, but it largely means that these three things are true in a literacy program, and that these three things would be true in any math program that you look at. And so those same shifts are also present in not just materials, but they're present in the assessments that students are experiencing, and that they're also present in instructional practice and the way we support teachers in developing their instructional practice. So to get into a bit more detail about the materials themselves and the importance of instructional materials. You know, there's lots of research, and I know Tracy later on in this afternoon's webinar will speak more detail to some of this research, but we know that these materials serve a super important role in defining quality. And one of the things that I think Fred mentioned in the initial problem statement is incredible variation that exists, you know, today within schools, across schools, within districts, across districts, within a state. And not that it is a guarantee of having less variation rather, but certainly quality materials play a super important role in helping teachers and helping students understand with a bit more consistency what is expected of them. And so that is really important. And the other thing that I like to say about these high quality materials, because I think in my experiences, it's been, you know, a challenging misunderstanding is that the materials themselves still require a lot of teacher expertise. And so I think often we confuse high quality materials with, you know, taking away the teacher's skill set and creativity and effectiveness, expertise that a teacher could offer, but they just support teachers in focusing their practice on how to meet the needs of individual students. And so when we talk to teachers, you know, across the country, and there's survey data that supports this, Many of you probably experience this or work with teachers who experience this. The number of hours that teachers spend when they don't have high quality materials in finding things and creating things and developing things, rather than spending time in thinking about how best to meet the needs of their students within a set of high quality materials. So, you know, we can talk more about that at any time, but that is a super passion topic of mine, and certainly putting high quality materials in the hands of great teachers with support is gets you really far in this initiative, and particularly when we think about issues of equity. We know that low-income students are less likely than high-income students to actually have that high-quality content. And, you know, obvious but worth saying that it turns out high-quality content is not more expensive. Low-quality content is not cheaper. These things are equally priced. So this is about understanding what high quality means. It's something that we intend to talk about. Everybody should know more than just a tagline what makes things high quality, but that it is absolutely, I think, imperative that we all commit to access for all students with high quality materials. And we just know that isn't the case in schools across this country right now. We know the impact of high quality materials, and so access to that is a really important part of our job. As I said in an earlier slide, however, just putting those materials in the hands of students and teachers doesn't get the job done. And the more we work on, you know, these issues, the more we realize that this must be part of a professional learning prioritization, that it is the skillful implementation of high quality materials, not just the existence of high quality materials, that makes the biggest difference for kids. So one of the things I often joke about is that, you know, district leaders who say, oh yeah, we completely align to college and career ready standards, and I have the purchase orders to prove it. Like, we all know, and that's, you know, a little bit tongue in cheek there, but we all know that what it really takes to have maximum impact from good materials present is that teachers are able to work in communities of practice, work together in best implementing and understanding those materials that are in front of them. So this refers to a paper called Practice What You Teach, one of my colleagues, Sue Pimentel and Ross Wiener from the Aspen Institute authored, that has just really strong case making around, wow, like, if you think about choices in how you decide to invest your PLC communities or other professional learning initiatives, like, you should be thinking about what it is that teachers are actually teaching and focusing that, therefore, on the curriculum and lessons that teachers are actually implementing and what the impacts of that are. When we think about instructional practice, that stems from high quality professional learning, then also this notion of what does it look like? And so in response, you know, when this question was originally asked of student achievement partners, hey, what does this look like? The initial request was like, can you make a video? Can you make a set of videos that show what this actually looks like in practice? And those of us who are in classrooms on a regular basis probably can imagine the library of videos necessary that would capture every kind of classroom, every kind of lesson, every topic, every subject, and that probably wouldn't do the right, answer the task of what is really being asked for. So what we did at Student Achievement Partners is we developed a tool that has gotten, you know, great uptick called the Instructional Practice Guide. It is an observation tool, a reflection tool. It's not an evaluation tool that really describes what are the teacher actions and student behaviors that would signal aligned instruction. The super important part of this and what makes it different from typical walkthrough protocols or other feedback mechanisms is that it is content and grade band specific. So our case to be made here is that if you want to get better at being a literacy teacher, there are practices that are different than being better at being a math teacher or a science teacher or a world language teacher or a phys ed teacher. And so these frameworks speak to specific practices within the content. And just to kind of throw a lot of text on a slide here for you, there's a link to the resource itself at the end of the slide deck for this afternoon, but you can just look and see that one important part of this is that these aren't three example core actions, these are the three core actions in literacy and the three core actions in math that these tools refer to. And not to read them to you, but just to invite you to make the connection between these three literacy core actions, these three math core actions, to those initial shifts that I spoke about moments ago. They are the same thing. So here we have a great example of coherence to say, oh, so what you're saying is, this is what should be true of the materials that I'm using, and oh my gosh, if someone went into my classroom to look at what practices I was using, they might see those very same priorities, those very same initiatives in the instructional practices that I employ in my classroom. Now, this kind of also reinforces the importance of having good materials because, for example, look at, you know, in core action one in literacy, you focus each lesson on a high quality text or multiple texts. Imagine a school system where the teachers and students don't have access to high quality text or multiple texts. Like, it would be really hard to give that teacher indication that he or she has practice aligned to college and career ready standards if he or she doesn't have access to the materials necessary to support this kind of practice. And just, you know, if you should decide as we begin our summer season of, you know, independent learning and curiosity, if you are interested in delving into this more, you know, our website is on the bottom, the header, the footer of these slides, achievethecore.org. And in addition to this actual instructional practice guide, observation, reflection rubric, we also have connected to it a lesson planning analysis tool, a student work analysis tool, and yes, we did develop a very small set of videos that actually show some of these specific core actions in play in classroom. So I invite you in your spare time, so to speak, to examine those things. The third part of this coherent system that I did mention, and I'll just speak to briefly, are assessment practices. And we know that these tend to have huge impact and influence in decisions that teachers make and things that students are learning in their classroom. Very important, therefore, although should not be assumed, actually, that they are part of this same coherent system. We often find ourselves looking at systems where the priorities in professional learning and or the priorities in a particular curriculum are in fact not part of the same system that designs the assessments, whether they're formative assessments, whether they're benchmark assessments, whether they're end of the year summative assessments. And you can only imagine what it feels like to be a teacher or a student in that system where you're working hard at the things that you're being asked to do, and then the things that inform accountability systems are in fact not part of that same system. So I include this slide not to kind of give you the details about what all those considerations will be, but to think about in your own systems, how are you taking these opportunities in reporting and so on to reinforce your professional learning priorities, to reinforce the curriculum that is in fact in place. And we do intend in our programming for the Summer Institute to reinforce this message as well with some additional specificity, tools, resources, and so on. The other thing that is so key to all of this is the content knowledge of the teachers that are doing this. And so that's kind of the glue that holds this together. I mentioned earlier this notion of teacher expertise being super important in the effective use of high quality instructional materials. And so part of what we are offering in programming and part of what Student Achievement Partners is continuing to explore opportunities for is how do we support educators in continuing to build strong content knowledge. And just putting books in the hands obviously is not enough. And we actually know that deep understanding of actually a few topics really makes a big difference. And, you know, we could probably all name what these topics are. None of these are, like, controversial, I don't think, or surprising, but boy, if K-5 math teachers really had a deeper understanding of fraction operations, concepts and connections with elementary numbers and operations, it would serve our students really well. 612, proportional reasoning with a connection to algebra. These obviously aren't the only things that kids need to learn, but they have such strong pull across the grade levels that a deep understanding of the content and how to scaffold multiple representations, all of those things are critical to the implementation and meeting the needs of all students in the content area. For literacy, I'm sure many of you who are engaged in the work of early literacy are, you know, kind of following a lot of the social media postings and a lot that's lately been around this notion of the science of reading. And so we feel really strongly that a strong understanding of the foundational skills of literacy takes students really far in this pathway. And then finally, for 312, again, not the only thing that a teacher needs to know, but high leverage concept of a great understanding for how to build comprehension in reading for students. And so, like I said, I don't think these are things that you would pull to say, hey, do you disagree or agree? I can talk to teachers pretty much from any state in the country, and I think these are things that we widely agree are important. And so let's invest our collective energy, effort, resources, and professional learning to making sure teachers are supported through materials, through assessment practices, through their own practice feedback and professional learning in developing in these areas in addition. So that was a really quick run through of this notion of a coherent instructional system that brings all these pieces together. And so I would now like to turn it over to my colleague Tracy from Learning Forward to do the next piece.
Thank you very much, Sandra. And so we're so thrilled to be working with Student Achievement Partners on this topic, as both Fred and Sandra have talked about. Over the last 18 months, we've really sharpened our focus on implementing student content and instructional materials as the core work of learning teams. This is really the work that matters. And just to be clear, this is not new work for us. The standards for professional learning have always specified that the content of educator learning is the content of student learning. So whatever materials are in use in classrooms and schools, that's the focus for what teachers are learning about. Content standards, the materials, the benchmarks, those are the things that drive what teachers need to become expert in. And we also have long recognized that educators' learning is most effective when it's embedded in the school day, really focused on what they're seeing with their students. Next slide. So I'm just going to touch on a few research studies on the next couple of slides. And about a year and a half ago, we published a white paper that really clarified our position and touched on a lot of this research as well, and we'll share links to that at the end of the webinar slides. And I'm guessing that you've seen a lot of this research since you have the interest in this topic. The information on this slide comes from our colleagues at the Center for Education Policy Research at Harvard, and just stressing that when you go to a high-quality textbook, you're going to see student achievement gains because of the quality of the materials. But that is, in that research study, they found that the gain there is larger than the improvement that you see from a teacher's growth and effectiveness in the first 3 years on the job. Next slide. There is a real ROI on high-quality materials, as Sandra mentioned. And the study from the Center for American Progress notes that, you know, if you find what using your criteria for understanding what high-quality instructional materials look like, you find a higher quality set of materials, it's worth it to buy it because of the gains that you'll see. Our colleagues at Ed Reports offer some very useful tools, a set of criteria that helps to understand what high quality looks like, as well as a practitioner-driven process for reviewing materials. It's another great resource, and we'd suggest you check them out there as well. And then on our next slide, there was a study published earlier this spring from the same researchers that we just talked about at the Center for Education and Research at Harvard that found less conclusive results about the difference that materials make. And so for people who are looking at releases of these studies and really interested in what we're finding here, you know, this was one that made us say, oh, okay, so is this not as important as we think it is? And what the researchers came out of that study saying was, first of all, much more research in this field needs to be done. And those of us who are particularly interested in the implementation side of things recognize that not only is intensive support required for true transformation in systems, but research about what that professional learning, what that looks like and what the impact is really a sorely needed resource for all of us who are concerned about having an impact in schools. All right, so we're gonna do another poll. And here we're gonna start to think about what our professional learning systems and structures look like. So we've got a variety of choices up here, and we're interested in hearing how your professional learning communities spend the majority of their time. And I know that there will certainly be many that you'd like to check here, but we're gonna ask you to pick the primary use of your PLC time. And we're eager to see your choices here and talk about how PLCs might focus their time moving forward. So we'll give you time to make some choices here and understand that there's a lot of overlap as well in these. And we'll be seeing those results coming up soon. Thanks for making the difficult choice there. We know that teachers need to contend with every single one of these at some point. We also know that the support that PLCs get from their school and system leaders has a big impact on how teams use their time. All right, so we're seeing, okay, that adapting and writing new lessons is a big use of time. Data analysis, also a big use of time. A lot of no answers there. The forced choice is very difficult, and we understand that. And then smattering on the other uses. All right, so we appreciate hearing the input there. And we'll think about how is it that you accomplish so many purposes with a PLC. Okay, so what does that professional learning look like ideally when we're implementing high quality instructional materials? I'll talk briefly about the importance of a cycle of continuous improvement focused on materials implementation. We believe this is a leading model for job embedded learning for teachers. Next slide. The learning team model that we're talking about today was established in our book, Becoming a Learning Team. And I wrote this with Stephanie Hirsch, and we were at first responding to the question of what exactly is it that PLCs should be doing with their precious time? You know, a lot of effort throughout the 90s, 2000s going into how do we structure time so that teachers can collaborate. And once you get past that hurdle, you have to answer the next question. Okay, what is it we're going to do with this time? That's why we wrote the book. We published this in 2016 and then quickly revised it, recognizing that we hadn't emphasized explicitly enough what the cycle looks like when teachers focus their time on implementing materials. So the cycle has 5 stages. And just to touch on a couple and what it means to be focusing learning team time on materials implementation, for example, when you are at the analyze data stage, those teacher teams are looking not only at student data and how students have performed on recent assessments, but also looking ahead to the units in instructional materials in use and saying, okay, given what we understand about student performance from the data we have, where do we anticipate challenges? What are some of the content and pedagogical trends we're seeing here? And use that information to set goals, knowing what are the units that we'll be teaching in the next 6 weeks, the next 12 weeks, and where do we really hone both student and educator learning goals to know that we're going to make significant progress in what and how students are learning. That learning stage, both individually and collaboratively, educator learning, then is really focused on the materials in use and honing teacher expertise, looking at where there might be needs for further support, and where do teachers need a deeper understanding of the particular instructional practices that will help the students that they serve understand the material deeply. On the next slide, I'm going to look a little more closely at that learning stage. And in the book, this is one of the tools that comes out of the book. When teachers are in that learning stage, they're setting their learning agenda, and they're taking into account the materials in use. Here are some of the questions that they will need to address. So this is really guidance for the learning agenda and outlines a process for studying student materials and increasing educator expertise. So they'll first take a scan at the materials in use and say, okay, what is the overall arc of this unit? And based on what we've studied deeply about our student learning challenges, what additional learning do we need to be able to achieve our goals? And then they'll think in the next column, what are the learning designs that best help us achieve those learning goals? When we look at how we perform on student assessment, and we look at the kinds of the high points in the content, what are the particular instructional strategies that we think we'll need to gain, and how are we going to gain them? So that's just a sample of how the learning will be focused on the materials in use. And then ultimately, teacher teams work through the various stages of that cycle, they're constantly assessing their own progress. They're assessing what difference their learning is making for students, and they're considering, all right, what modifications do we need to make as we move into another upcoming unit? And what else do we need to know deeply about this, the materials in use, so that we are best able to really help students achieve the ambitious goals. All right, so let's go ahead. We're going to skip this poll because we want to make sure we have plenty of time to answer your questions. And I'm really excited to turn the presentation over to Linda McMillan, who works with teacher teams doing the kind of work that we're talking about. So Linda, thanks for joining us and talking about your experience.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes. Okay, great. Hello, thank you, and hello, everyone. I'm just going to give an overview of our professional development structure here in DC. When we think of what perspective we look at our professional development, we look at wanting it to be embedded, job embedded for the teachers in the practice, and it's not an isolated development that they're being a part of, that they're looking at data, assessments, different kinds of assessments, a variety of assessments, and analyzing that data as we're looking at that data. The practice, the instructional practice, having time to tweak it, having time to try it on, and then going back and maybe tweaking a second time if that is needed. The instructional materials, looking deep into the quality of the materials that we're presenting to our students, and that this cycle continues. It's not just a one-time thing, that this cycle just continues and continues. As you have seen and heard before, that research says that it's job embedded, that's high frequency, that it happens often, and that the collaboration takes place among teachers as well as other professionals. Here in DC, we have our professional development structure that's called LEAP, which stands for Learning Together to Advance Our Practice, and we have three guiding principles for our sessions. The content, we have grade bands, and we also have content bands. So the content bands would be for the ELA in math, or math and science, ELA in social studies, and we also have grade bands, kindergarten through second, 3 through 5, and then early childhood for the schools. It's school-based. Of the roughly 115 schools that we have here in DC, each of the schools has their own LEAP sessions that they participate in. And it's focused on the teacher growth for the adult learning curriculum portion. It's focused on the teacher growth. The goals that every teacher becomes an expert in teaching the curriculum through these LEAP cycles that they participate in weekly. That every student receives rich, engaging, and challenging instruction daily. And this sort of just transferred from the teacher learning, and now that is transferred over into the students receiving that rich and engaging and challenging instruction daily. As I stated, every teacher takes part in the weekly based professional development, which is the LEAP cycle that happens at each of the schools in DC. This is our third year with the LEAP process for professional development. In our first year, it was all the schools focused on the same content. Something that has changed over time is that the focus is based on school choice. You have more autonomy in choosing what particular focus your school is going to focus on, and that focus could change over time throughout that school year. Who leads the sessions? All the schools have LEAP leaders for ELA and for math. The prescribed time limit is 90-minute sessions. Some schools have two 45-minute sessions. We're fortunate here at my school, we have a two-hour period where our teachers spend for our LEAP sessions. The focus of the weekly cycle, focusing on content, standards, shifts, new curriculum planning and pacing, and that sort of carried over from the first year until now also. But they're still focusing on those components of the cycle, but the difference is that you get to choose what your focus is going to be. What are the parts of the cycle? The seminar, the observation, the debrief. The first year, each week was a different focus. The difference this now is that the weekly seminars have a shared learning. They have a planning, practice, or revising portion. There's examining and responding to student work, and we also have data meetings. Our LEAP leaders trained. LEAP leaders are trained, there's a summer intensive training, and there's training throughout the school year for the LEAP leaders. Some of the challenges is when you're looking at your master schedule and scheduling for your school, putting that into your master schedule and being very creative and putting that into your schedule. Getting teacher buy-in. One of the things that helped with getting teacher buy-in with us was teachers seeing the improvement in their craft and the improvement in their student performance. Also thinking, not having the teachers to think that the LEAP leader is sort of the sage on the stage, that they have the, knowing the need of your teachers helps you to make sure that you're prescribing what need and what development your teachers need. Some of our things that we're really proud of that were successful for us, the increase in student performance on assessments, and that we're also building teacher leaders. Some of the things that it takes, definitely having that structure in place, keeping the plan time sacred, not just pushing it to the one side when something happens within the school day, but making sure you're keeping that planning time sacred each day. Following through with the expectations from the observations to the debriefs to actually having the LEAP sessions each week. Analyzing data frequently from looking at student work and following the protocol that you have for looking at the student work. Digging into research and best practices as a team as part of the team's shared learning. And focusing on the content which is grounded in the shifts and the standards. And that was just a very quick overview of our embedded professional development here in DC.
All right, Linda, thank you so much. And of course, Tracy and Sandra, thank you as well for, I think, really getting us deep into this conversation. You know, as we think about this, and some of the questions that folks have been asking, I think, have been really good questions. So start typing more of your questions in the chat box. But as you think about, so where do you go next? You know, how do you dig deeper into these issues? How do we as teachers, as teams, as schools, and as districts seek opportunities for coherence around this work? And as Tracy hinted at, this whole notion of strengthening the work and the actions of our learning teams, you know, how do we do that? And what does that look like? And people are asking questions like Kim just asked, you know, how do we make sure that, how do teachers dig into best practices? What does that look like? And so we want to build on the expertise that we have at the school level and at the team level. And so what does that look like and what does that mean? And so there are lots of questions that I think could inform your next thoughts around these issues. We've listed a few here. And so as you look at these questions, let them prompt you to ask questions now in the chat box to our presenters. And just to tee up some of the questions that might come the way of our presenters, one that was asked several times was around, so what is high quality materials? How do we know what is labeled high quality truly is, particularly when it comes around, when it has to do with the OER resources? You know, how do we trust those labels? And Sandra, I'm gonna, you started and mentioned the work of Ed Reports, and Tracy, so did you. But Sandra, would you have to take a first stab at answering that question about how do we trust what's being labeled as such?
So I'm gonna connect that to actually another really important question also, Fred, that came up, which was teacher buy-in.
Absolutely.
And I think that it is super important and super risky to just say to a teacher, trust me, this is high quality. And I think everyone in this work, it's kind of incumbent upon us to understand what is it that we mean by high quality. We're not just interested in like buying a thing that's high quality, but we need to know what that represents. It's part of why we got to such, what I'll say, a disastrous textbook marketplace to begin with, because the things that sold well weren't things that actually helped students or teachers build their knowledge and skills around the work that mattered most. And so kind of what Ed Reports has offered is to get to a better, more understandable design about what does high quality materials represent. And as I say, if you look at the Ed Reports criteria, they're very similar to the shifts. That's not coincidental, but that part of the work of getting teacher buy-in has to be understanding what makes it high quality. So then when you do, and I will say, the very necessary work of making modifications, adaptations, so that these high quality materials work best in the settings with the kids and teachers that you're all working with, that you don't make those adjustments in ways that interrupt the quality, which is possible if you don't understand high quality. So I think that the Ed Reports system is a very good one. They rely very much on teacher review panels. Educator practitioners are the ones giving their reviews. They go beyond just giving a rating, but actually an explanation, which, by the way, is super powerful professional learning to kind of dig into what those things look like, to understand what the strengths as well as the weaknesses are of any individual product. And so that all goes a very long way in getting to teacher buy-in. And I can't say clearly enough that the strongest way to get teacher buy-in, perhaps even more or maybe equal to engaging teachers in the selection process, is absolutely the professional learning of the kind that Linda spoke of that supports teachers
throughout, not just 3 days before the school year starts, but throughout the school year in skillful implementation with those materials. It takes time, it takes commitment, it takes effort, but there is nothing that would have better impact on supporting or destroying an effort.
No, that's a great response to both those questions. And Jill reminds us, you know, sometimes these materials come in these shiny packages and they just look like they've got all the bells and whistles. and we absolutely know that that's not the criteria that one should use to make those choices.
Yeah, and I'll just tell you, Fred, like, it came to our attention at Student Achievement Partners early in this work that we meet with publishers all the time. We talk to them all the time. And they knew that the typical textbook selection process happened with groups of teachers sitting around a table during lunch. And those are the things that quickly, you know, catch someone's eye. That, oh, yeah, we like this. We like this. And so they started building materials, like thinking about the little limited time teachers have to make these decisions. What are the things that leap off the page and so on? And they forgot to think about content. And I think that's, you know, we've lived with the product of that system for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're gonna continue with the questions. I just put the slide up here now because a lot of the questions are around, let's go deeper and better understand how this looks in our setting and in our context. And that's a real big part of what will be happening this summer at Summer Institutes in Boston. And so you see the slide, you see the dates, you see the link to that information. All of the folks who are here with us today will be joining us in Boston and we'll be going deeper around these issues, and not just in the general sense, but specifically in mathematics, literacy, and science. So we look forward to having the conversation be extended and expanded in Boston. You know, Tracy, on this issue of high quality, because I think it was it Lisa who helped us remember that context matters, and teachers digging into those materials is really important. Is there anything else that you would offer around the high quality question?
So Lisa, you make a great point. And I think that studying the criteria that Ed Reports or any reviewing organization make, and then looking, and I'm going to go back to that word that Sandra used about coherence. It, you know, in the ideal, your entire system is set up around coherent goals for students, and that every educator in that system understands what those goals are, and that they have the time and support to really deepen their expertise around the student standards that they are charged with making sure their students meet. So when teachers have that expertise and they can modify criteria, participate in reviews at the district level based on their district's criteria, then they bring their own context to that process. And again, really critical professional learning and way to build on that expertise that is sitting in every classroom, and we need to find ways to make sure we're using that expertise efficiently and supporting those teachers in the ways that matter.
And thank you, Tracy. And I know some of the questions that have come up are specific to what Linda shared in DC. And so, Linda, I'm giving you the heads up. You know, people are just wondering, so what does it look like when people dig into best practices? And then how much time is spent around some of these activities each week in the DC schools, and in particular, of course, in your own setting?
Just the digging into the best practices, that comes from when teachers have tried on specific structures or strategies, and we come and we share those strategies. For example, we use Eureka Math for our math instruction, and it was around the tape diagram. In one of our LEAP sessions, our second grade teacher was talking about how she uses the tape diagram in her class, and the fifth grade teacher, she was just like, oh, wow, you guys use that in second grade? So we ended up having this whole school-wide piece around using the tape diagram. So just whatever those best practices are, whether it's instruction, whether it's a strategy or a structure, and trying it on. Teachers have the opportunity to, especially for a practice that they have not used before, they have the time in our LEAP sessions to try that particular structure or that strategy on in our LEAP sessions to build their confidence with when they actually have to go and present it or use it in front of their class or with their students. They do have some knowledge of what it looks like, what it, you know, what should they do, what should they not do, that sort of thing that happens during the LEAP sessions. So, and it varies from grade to grade, and it varies from teacher to teacher, what works best for that particular class or that particular teacher. When you ask about how much time is spent each week at each level, we have, our teachers have a two-hour planning period each day. One of those days is our LEAP session. And again, that time varies from school to school. The prescribed time for our LEAP sessions is 90 minutes. Some schools have two 45-minute sessions, which they do over a period of 2 days. And someone asked about selecting LEAP leaders. That's based at the school level, who the LEAP leaders happen to be for their school.
Wonderful, thank you. So I know there's some other questions that we didn't have a chance to immediately answer. I'll ask you to continue to put those in the chat box. On these next two slides, you've heard several resources mentioned, these from Learning Forward. And on the next slide, I'm going to put up a resource from Student Achievement Partners that, again, when you get the recording of this webinar, you'll be able to see those resources. You'll be able to see the links to those resources. So we invite you to access those resources in order to get more information on all that we've discussed. And then, of course, as I mentioned earlier, we invite you to join us in Boston for the Summer Institute, where we'll be going even more deeply into details around everything that was discussed on this webinar. And I invite you as teams of staff who are focused on these issues around curriculum, around college and career-ready standards, around instructional materials, professional learning, and the alignment across. Those are the folks that are deeply interested in this work, and of course, the ones who would be most interested in joining us later in the summer in Boston. We want to thank all of our presenters for their expertise and their answers to your questions. And of course, we thank all those who participated in the conversation with us today. This is something that continues to be the work of each of our organizations and, of course, the work of our partnership between and among organizations, Learning Forward and Student Achievement Partners. And so we thank you for joining this journey with us. We know that together we'll make a difference in the lives of our children because that's what this work is all about. So thank you, everyone, and have a great rest of this day, rest of this week and weekend.
Thank you.